On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we take stock in the standings. The All-Star break is past. The trade deadline is past. Are any of these teams actually good? We start with the American League, where the Rays swept the Mariners. Oh my goodness, what is going wrong in Seattle? The American League Central has a new second-place team. The Yankees and Red Sox had very different weekends. Then we look at the Dodgers, who've also been struggling lately. Look at those snakes. Oh my goodness, should we take them seriously? The Pirates are disappointing us, and so much more from a wild weekend, including when are the dog days? Let's debate on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows the dog days are every day if you're a dog. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. When do the dog days of summer commence and when do they end?
I have wondered this. This is something that certainly every year it's like, is it happening? Or you kind of look around and you're like, is this it? Are we in it?
And then days?
And then the back half, it's like, is it over? Are we done? Are we excited now? Are we excited about baseball again? Or is it the stretch run? At some point, it evolves, right? It evolves into here. We come down the stretch. I don't think we're quite there yet. It seems that the dog days are here.
The dog days are not over, as Florence and the Machine once sang together on today's episode of Baseball Barbacast. We're going to take a breath, and we're going to take stock. The deadline is behind us. Everyone's about to go on vacation, including Jordan. And before we do that, we want to see where the standings are. And our opener is the incredibly hilarious and frustrating American League. Today's society rewards mediocrity more than ever. And nowhere is that more apparent than the American League wildcard race, where the Texas Rangers at 59-59 hold a playoff spot. Let's just run through the standings for those of you that have been checked out and check you back in. Our three division leaders are the Tampa Bay Rays, the Chicago White Sox. Yes, the Chicago White Sox. And the Houston Astros, the Rays and the White Sox, if the season ended today, would get those byes. The wildcard teams are the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox, and the aforementioned Rangers, the Yankees and Red Sox. As always seems like the case, as the AL East representatives have better records than the White Sox and Astros, the two other division leaders. Behind the Rangers are a flurry of teams, six teams within 3.5 games of that final spot. The Tigers are one back. The Twins are 1.5 back. The Guardians also 1.5 back. The Orioles 2 back. The Mariners 3.5 back. And the Jays 3.5 back. None of these teams are over 500. They all have more losses than wins. All of them could be classified as disappointments, except for the Twins, who are just kind of happy to be here. So we're going to go through some of the results from the weekend, and there's nowhere more appropriate to start than in Seattle, where the Seattle Mariners are making a real argument for the season's most disappointing team on a weekend that revolved around celebrating 50 years of Mariners baseball, legends from franchise history showing up at T-Mobile Park. The Mariners offered a reminder that the story of this team, sadly, has been one of disappointment as they were swept off the diamond by the Tampa Bay Rays, scoring a combined total of 4 runs over those 3 games. It was a weekend of total frustration. Jordan, Mr. Mariner, what the heck?
Boy, do they stink right now. That offensive no-show also extends back to the series before, when they were shut out in 2 of their 3 games against the Tigers last week. They did squeak out a victory in that one to avoid this to be an L6. But on this weekend, when you are celebrating, I mean, what a cool thing, right? What a cool thing to
so
have.
Cool.
I believe of the, they basically had a celebration of the 50 greatest Mariners of all time. And I think like 45 of them were in attendance. Or maybe, I know they're not all living. But it was, I think at least 40 of them were in the building, which is so cool. And a really amazing collection of people. and players who mean a lot, including, which I think is a relevant point here, seven active Mariners, right?
Like seven?
We talk about, yes, yes.
That's and way too many.
So you would say that, and I that was my first instinct too. And then if you go and sort, you go career war, it's hard to really argue with any of them. And so maybe
Cal,
it was just six. I think it was seven.
JP, Julio, and then some pitchers.
Yeah. So I think it was Gilbert, Kirby, Wu, and Munoz. And
so
like
here's
I
the
said,
thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
But I think that it's telling. It's telling. It's both. I think that that is, you can make fun of it. You can laugh at it and be like, that's ridiculous. How are these octave? It's 50 years. And then you'd be like, okay, well, this franchise was not exactly producing consistent winners. They weren't producing consistent talent for a long part of their history. And then maybe even more relevant to the conversation that we're actually about to have, this roster is as talented as ever. The peaks of these players on this roster is all-star level for almost all of these guys. I know JP hasn't made an all-star team, right? But these are really, really, really good players, especially relative to franchise history. And yet all of them on the same team are amounting to 56 and 63 in arguably the most hyped season, or certainly the most hyped season of the century. Maybe not in franchise history. So I think it does say a lot about everything that's going on here.
Yeah. It is this tragic encapsulation of what Mariners baseball has been about. This organization is so good at putting on a show. They're very skilled at community interaction. They're very skilled at making all of this matter separate from the product on the field. The Mariners throughout their history have had an overwhelming amount of legendary players, like proportionally to how long they've been around. Griffey, Edgar, Ichiro, Felix Hernandez, A-Rod, Randy Johnson as your top six in career wins above replacement. I mean, that's three inner circle Hall of Famers or Hall of Fame level players in A-Rod's case. A-Rod, Randy, and Griffey. And then Edgar's in the Hall, Ichiro's in the Hall. And
I mean, Felix, Ichiro,
I think, will get in the Hall. Ichiro might be inner circle too. Like, these right. are not just good players. These are cultural linchpins. People people who you need to tell the story of the sport. And yet, they have never been to a World Series. And so for the team to go and lay an egg on this weekend was kind of perfect. Where do they go from here? Because the Mariners are 3.5 back only, which is just what a gift they've been given. They head on the road for 9 games, which is just a kind of a gauntlet. Yankees, Astros, Brewers. Could they pop their head up from that trip and just be cooked?
Well, that's the thing. And there's like the big questions about the Mariners, about the roster, about the coaching staff, about the front office, whatever. We could do that. But I do think for the purposes of this podcast, especially because we're going to kind of run through all these teams and their chances and who we actually feel like we're going to be watching in October, the schedule does matter. And the Mariners schedule, you just mentioned the next 9 games, then they come home and the next homestand is Cubs-Phillies. Then they go on the road again and it's Blue Jays, who are at least playing a little bit better, and then Red Sox. So that is about as hard of a schedule as you're going to have in the league over the rest of August, right? So that is incredibly grueling. However, you look at September, A's, Rangers, A's, Angels, Rockies, Astros, Angels. So they have last September's about as easy
like
of a schedule as you can have in the league. August is about as hard. Now they might be toast by then. We talk about these 9 games. I just mentioned it's more than that. They're going to have to pick it up if they're going to have any chance. The playoff odds, finally, they've been staying among the top group in the American League for much of the season. They have finally started to fall over the last week in a very real way to where they are now at a season low, still 30%, which when you watch them, you think, it's that high? I mean, it looks so bad. And they've fallen, 7 games under. But anything is possible here. This is going to be true for a lot of these disappointing American League teams. So, but the schedule's the thing I'm thinking about. And I just, if they can't hit like this, and these, a lot of these teams, unsurprisingly, they're good teams, they can really pitch it. Maybe getting away from Seattle, sometimes they, the offense really does heat up when it goes on the road. That is plausible. But at the same time, I just, and maybe that'll help, right? Maybe it was a situation where they were pressing, considering the circumstances this weekend against the good Rays team, and they fell on their face. The talent's still in place. They're finally healthy. That's the other thing. Like, they kind of have their guys back at this point, so you can't really point to that. But they got to get going here soon.
For Mariners, or for non-Mariners fans, for neutrals that have not watched the team this year, I think you can kind of sum up the disappointment pretty easily. Cal Raleigh, historic fall off. Injuries have played a part. Yes, but his production before and after injury has been about the same. It is an all-time hero to zero season. Not sure what it means for him moving forward. Does it get better this year? Maybe. He looked a little bit better at points over the weekend, but on the main, I mean, he has a 65 OPS plus. Josh Naylor, immensely disappointing. Bringing him back on a big contract. He hit two home runs over the weekend. That was encouraging to see, his first homers in like 2 months. And then Brendan Donovan, who was their main offseason acquisition, has just been hurt all year. He's played in 29 games. That has been a massive miss for them. Generally, it's another like tantalizing, ultimately, you know, less than Julio season. Randy has been very good at hitting and very bad at the field. Cole Young has been great. But on the main, like, this offense just hasn't been good enough, and the pitching, instead of being elite, has been simply good. Now, let me say this. Very rarely do I ever want to advocate for someone to lose their job. Dan Wilson, Mariners manager. This is what it looks like when a manager does lose their job. Does that make sense?
Of course. Of course it does. Yeah.
Like, team with enormous expectations and a ton of talent, underperforming for reasons that no one can really pinpoint, while displaying a total lack of energy and a general discombobulated aura. That is what happens when managers end up unemployed. And Dan Wilson has made just a comedy of mistakes throughout this season in terms of bullpen management. He is a franchise legend. I assume he was one of the 50 players honored. Yeah,
of course. Of course.
Yes. Yeah. Over the weekend. I guess you can't fire him before that. If they come back from this road trip, like, if they have 9 games, if they go under 500, I would fire him. I just think you have to shake things up and try and save the season that started with such high hopes.
I'm going to use this as a pivot to the Rays. Because I think when you look at a team like the Mariners who are disappointing and you wonder what is going wrong, a lot, because so often we just look at the talent on paper and the projection, we say, oh, well, how could this team not win 90 games? Look at all this thing that they've amassed. It comes down to the manager for sure. It comes down to the coaching staff in general. What makes the Rays so impressive, among many things, because it's not just a payroll thing.
Guys?
Yes, of course. Kevin Cash. Has been, clearly he's been doing something right. He is the longest tenured manager in baseball, I think, comfortably, right? Because he even predates Dave Roberts. The Rays, and this, you could also apply this to the front office, right? This is going to come up with some other teams later on when we're talking about other small market teams who have talent that are disappointing, Pittsburgh Pirates. They are doing so many things well that it almost doesn't matter what the roster construction is, the kind of style of it. That they have the support in place, even when they're losing coaches to other organizations, they're losing front office members to other organizations. The culture there and the understanding, the standards and the communication and just all of it working together, very often, I know the Rays haven't been as good the last couple of years, very often creates a winning product. Now, do we know what that means in October? Who's to say? But the Rays have been by far the most consistent team in the American League this year, and that is not an accident, even with a lot of new players in place. Yes, they have star power in Caminero and Yandy Diaz. But they got Chandler Simpson batting third, and you're like, what is this? And you know what? Who cares? It's working. It's working. They're finding ways to win. They're 12th sweep of the season for Tampa Bay. That's the most in MLB, and it's not even close. And that is such a good example. I think sweeps really are a good example in regular season of a total command of the matchup. and of execution and of just being like, oh, we got these guys because we know how to pitch them. They don't have a plan. They are not a cohesive offense. It doesn't matter how talented they are. We can beat them with our guys because we know what we're doing. That's what the Rays have been doing all season. Like I said, who knows what it means in October, but I think it was just such an incredible contrast to these two organizations in what they do well and what they don't do well. And I think that's what makes Tampa Bay so impressive. They're now 5.5 games up on New York. They've won 6 in a row. They just swept the Rockies last week. They sweep the Mariners in Seattle. Now they go to Sacramento. They're probably going to sweep them too because the Rays take care of business. This is how they handle things. And they're not a perfect team. But in this year's American League, they're really, really, really impressive. So you have to give them credit as well. And I think that last thing on Seattle, then we'll open it up to the rest of the American League. The only thing you can cling to, because nothing that they've done on the field, they've had these wins where you'd be like, that's the turning point. I can't say that anymore. They've fallen on their face more often after those turning points than they've actually, you know, ridden it into some real momentum. The only thing you can say is, well, they've had a similar low points in recent seasons and have still rallied. Last year, they also got swept by the Rays in early September. They were 4 games back of the Astros, and then they got crazy hot and went nuts in September and won the division.
Yeah.
Because of the schedule, that's in theory possible again this year, but they also have a gauntlet to get through before over the next month that they might be buried to the point where it doesn't matter. So
that's where I'm at.
One other thing
that is important just to note is by StatCast fielding run value, they have the worst defense in the sport.
Yeah.
Is probably the reason that the run prevention has been worse than it has in previous years.
And the bullpen
is probably not all on the pitchers.
Yeah.
Right. But on the main, I mean, this is as disappointing of a team as we have in the league this season. I think they need to finish. If they can finish August basically where they are right now, they'll have a chance.
They got a shot.
3.5 out. Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
Rangers. Texas Rangers, their division mates, taking 2 out of 3 over the Baltimore Orioles. The Rangers sat on their hands at the deadline, and guess it doesn't matter because they're 59-59 and in a playoff spot, 2 out of 3 over the weekend from the O's. Jordan Montgomery is back. Sure. 2023 World Series hero who's dealt with injuries, was on the Diamondbacks for 10 minutes. Sure. Great. He gives up 3 homers and 4 innings of relief on Sunday, but this was a good weekend for the Rangers, who are now just a half game back of Houston in the American League West as well.
Yeah, and I don't know what to make of Texas. Again, as we look at this mess of American League teams, who are we buying? I do end up looking at the schedule.
Yeah, what's your belief meter?
Yeah, I mean, Texas, you got to give them credit because they haven't really had like a huge skid, right? I mean, they were in first place there for a little bit. I don't know what their longest losing streak of the season. Yeah, I guess they had. I guess it was actually kind of recently, is where they had lost 6 in a row coming into August, but then they won 4 in a row, so they've kind of bounced back. We obviously believe in Skip Schumacher getting swept by the Astros right before the deadline seemed to turn them into sellers or at least non-buyers. But I also think their team's like okay, like the offense has improved enough to where I can't totally bury them, and they kind of know what they're doing on the mound. So I'm not super impressed by them, but would it shock me if they end up in the postseason? Not really at this point.
Their bullpen has been really impressive. Their rotation is kind of underwhelmed. Like Eovaldi has taken a step back. Gore has been a disappointment. DeGrom has been just all right. Kamar Rocker hasn't taken that leap. And then the offense is solid. Jock Peterson has been huge for them over the last couple of months. Corey Seager is off the IL. He homered on Saturday. If he's going to get going, that's a big deal for the Rangers. But I struggle to trust this team as constructed with the rotation that it has. I know it was good over the weekend, but the Orioles offense is not exactly very imposing. Skip will get the most out of the guys in the bullpen. He knows what he's doing there. My belief meter in Texas is pretty low. They have a nice little road trip coming up. 4 in Anaheim, 3 in Sacramento, 3 at home against the Nats, 3 at home against the Angels. So kind of a soft stretch here. They need to
kind of the opposite
rack up some
of
wins.
Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how tough their September schedule is, but that is definitely an opportunity there to kind of get back into first place and create something of a cushion. I will say, though, like, Baltimore is way more interesting to me here. This is another team who they got worse. They got much worse at the deadline.
They maybe got the most worse?
Yeah.
Of any contender?
Of any contender, I think that's a totally, well, contender. Team that's still within a playoff spot, that's the thing, right? What does a contender mean? They have stayed kind of hanging around here. You know, Andy Azokar is going nuts in Double A. We'd love to see that, or High A, I don't know. But he's not helping the offense this year. Pete Alonso has his first multi-home run game of the season. I mean, is the Orioles argument almost like a Tigers-esque, like the galvanization of, we're selling, who cares? We're playing with how they traded all of our good players, and now we're still in it, so let's have some fun. We're good enough to stay relevant. I think with Baltimore, I mean, I know the Rangers won the season. I still would be much more surprised if it's the Orioles in the postseason than the Rangers. I don't think that's much of a take. I know that that's what the standings say. I mean, what is the positive, like, what does this look like for Baltimore to kind of stick around?
The starting rotation has been all right. Like, Shane Boz and Kyle Bradish have both been good.
Yeah.
They were both good over the weekend, and it didn't matter. Trevor Rogers is currently in a good pitching mood. He's been dominant for, you know, 2 months at this point. They have a very interesting 10-game stretch coming up. So they got 3 in Minnesota this week, 4 in Tampa, 3 at home against the Yanks, 3 at home against Tampa. If they can survive that, they've got a shot. Cardinals, A's, Rockies. Like, the schedule, we keep coming back to it. It is a very important character here. What the Orioles need, and the reason why I think it is fair to continue believing, maybe irrationally, Gunnar Henderson. All these AL teams down the standings here have this mega star that is underperforming. The Jays have Vlad, the Mariners have Cal, and the Orioles have Gunnar.
Yep.
If Gunnar can just turn it on, that is one of the biggest what-ifs over the rest of the season that could propel the Orioles back into the mix. Will that happen? We've seen no indication of that at all.
Let's move to the AL Central and kind of group these together. I know the Twins lost a series against the Brewers, but we're going to focus on these three other teams. Royals. Oh my God, they're so bad. All right, Tigers take 2 out of 3 over the Giants, and the White Sox 2 out of 3 over the Guardians. Remember, going into the weekend, we said, oh my goodness, if the Guardians, as bad as they have played, they just got swept by the Mets. Maybe if they sweep the White Sox, they could be in first place. The Guards won on Friday, and it was like, uh-oh, are these Sox sweating? No. No, they're not. Sox win the next two to extend their division lead over Cleveland and Minnesota to 4 games. But here come the Detroit Tigers, folks, who take 2 out of 3 over the Giants after losing on Friday. And yes, we are talking about the second place Detroit Tigers, who are still under 500 at 58-60. But they're only 1 game back of the third wild card. Their plus 87 run differential is the best mark in the entire American League. What?
Wow.
Excuse me?
And feels like they're a left-handed starter short, Jordan. They could really use a front of the line lefty.
They sure could. They sure could.
A Scooble type.
But maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe they just need a righty named River. They were 11 and a half games back of the Cleveland Guardians at the end of May. How the turntables after last year when they squandered an even larger lead even later in the season. Let's not say it's the same thing. However, the Tigers have now passed the Guardians in the standings. And while they are still under 500, 58-60 is not a bad mark here in the American League. And I think the thing I want to focus on with Detroit is Jackson Jobe. Jackson Jobe is back. Troy Melton is awesome. And if you have not been familiar with Troy Melton, even if you watched him at the end of last season, he was injured to start this year. All the way in on Troy Melton. However, what people have kind of been saying very flippantly over the last couple of months, even as we've thought about the Tigers pitching staff post-Scooble, I've heard smart people be like, well, and then they have Jackson Jobe coming back. And I was like, okay, well, I know Jackson Jobe was a high pick. He was a high prospect. Jackson Jobe was not good before he went down. He was honestly quite disappointing as a rookie. The stuff was there. He would flash it. But by no means did I expect, like, okay, great, now we just plug in another frontline starter in Jackson Jobe. I still maintain that take. However, all right, Jackson Jobe, 5 scoreless on Saturday. I don't know if that was his first or second start since he's been activated. But that is an exciting thing. Certainly just big picture. Yeah, so that was his first start of the season in the big leagues. So certainly important for just like the future of the Tigers. But even if we're talking about them right now and we're thinking about what this rotation could look like, because they also traded Casey Mize, it sounds like Jobe's going to really get an opportunity here. And now the pressure's on him. It's on Melon to keep it up. The pressure's on Fromber to start actually pitching like the guy that they gave a ton of money to. We've sort of seen it here and there. So Detroit is, I still am really never going to believe in their offense. Max Clark has certainly helped. Obviously, McGonigal has continued to be great. So I'm skeptical there. But at this point, why would I be too harsh in this American League?
There is one spot really available in the American League, and it's going to be this team. I think the Tigers, I think they're making the playoffs. I feel pretty good about that. This is the team that I believe in.
To be clear, not winning the division. Let's be clear. You're saying that you think the White Sox are going to hold on. Yeah.
No, I think the Tigers are going to win the division. Now that I'm thinking about it more, the Sox, I think, will sneak in a wild card. Since the start of July, since July 1, the Tigers have the lowest ERA in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
They have had the best run prevention.
Well.
In the entire sport.
Scooble helps.
He's not on the team anymore. Over that span, they have also scored the third most runs per game in the sport.
All right.
Behind only the Cubs and the Red Sox. I think that this is the best team here with the most talent. I think Clark is a legitimate difference maker. I think Dylan Dingler's the best catcher in baseball.
I mean, he has been. It's not really a debate. It's like he's so far ahead of everybody else this year. If you want to say he's taken the title because Cal has completely lost it, Will Smith has been on factor, and William Contreras has been good. But yeah, sure, that's fine. Dylan Dingler's awesome.
Kevin McGonigal's taken he's maintained this all season.
Also,
Colt Keefe has a 165 WRC plus since the start of July. He's been smoking the ball.
Wow.
Riley Green's hitting some home. Like, I don't know, man. Like, this is the team that I feel the most confident in of any of this American League mess that has gone on.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. I'm still going to be skeptical of this offense. I'm going to stay skeptical of this offense. I know there's some new characters that make me feel a little bit better with Clark and McGonigal, but after how bad it got last year, how bad it was for the start of the season, this is when it started to tail off. So I hear you. I think that the upside is indisputable. And I will say the last thing about the AL Central, and then we'll move to the Yankees and Red Sox, who lost a series to the A's. We talk about their chances to win the division. 7 more games against the White Sox. So that is those are going to be really juicy. Some of them are coming up this weekend. The Tigers have 3 against the White Sox this weekend. And then 4 games in Chicago, third to last series of the year. That is trending towards a really, really delicious September series. So the opportunity is there for them to win the division. But, you know, I'm gonna keep my guard up at least a little bit for now.
Yankees, and the Red Sox will do quickly because they're going to be in the playoffs. Will either of them catch the Rays is sort of the story over the rest of the season. Yankees took 2 out of 3 over the Braves this weekend. Good to see their offense do enough. They did not look dominant really at all on Friday, scored 2 in the 9th and then won it in extra innings. And then on Saturday, homer from I keep calling him Jacob Lombard. Every time I do that, I need to make a donation. George Lombard Jr., he goes yard. Rice's first homer since July 26. The Yankees win that 5-4. Sunday, though, the Braves avoid the sweep. Matt Olson, 34th home run in his 900th. consecutive game. Recently passed Stan Musial for eighth all time on the consecutive games played list. Cal Ripken is untouchable. He has to like double this and then some. We had Chris Sale getting ejected before the first pitch for yelling at umps over a balk call that transpired on Saturday. I have grown very, like, my affection for Chris Sale has grown. His red-assness, his gruffness, his sort of general anger towards everything that's going on in public is, like, very, I find it endearing. Because he's not like that when you talk to him. He's very enjoyable to chat with. And it's like well-founded. He's like, I've seen it all and done it all. And this ain't how we do it. I feel pro Chris Sale at this point in my life.
I agree. Yeah, it seems like he's become almost more relatable and personable as he's gotten older and has like won a Cy Young finally. And it's like, oh, he almost retired. And then he came back and he loves pitching. But he still just has these moments of extreme
he just has fire. The
and yeah, and oftentimes it does seem to be deserved. We're not going to spend too much time on the legitimacy of the balk here, but it was very funny. And also just what an opportunity, like a real good ump show moment of just the clip of it. I mean, the video of this is so funny. I don't know if you saw what this looked like, because this is before, I mean, this is probably 10 minutes before first pitch, because this is when the umpires are walking out.
Yeah. This, I think Guinness Book of World Records, the earliest ejection.
It might be. It might ever be.
I mean, it basically
has to be, because the umps weren't even on the field yet. So this is within 30 seconds of the umps even being on the field.
At Yankee Stadium, the tunnel that the media goes in and out of is down the third base line, sort of further down the line from the visiting dugout. That tunnel snakes into the main subterranean tunnel that like semicircles the stadium. And in that hallway is the umpire room. And so they were like walking out of that tunnel, down the stairs, up the stairs, onto the field. And they're walking by the dugout on their way to meet with the managers at home plate. And Chris Sale presumably says something and just gets the hook right there. And the clip of the ump walking, stopping, running him, and then continuing on his way to home was an all-timer.
Yeah, Dan Merzel.
Merzel.
He's had some questionable umpiring moments over the last couple years. However, as a former member of the Johns Hopkins baseball team,
he gets a pass from us.
I know. Yeah, we're like, you know what, whatever. Well, let's let this D3 legend throw out these future Hall of Famers because it's funny.
Should he be allowed to do Blue Jays games, considering he was once a Blue Jay?
Oh, that's true. Very, just a very, thought. Very bi. So anyway, yeah, I will say Yankees, nice series win. You didn't look amazing doing
nice.
It, but a nice series win over the Braves. All right, let's finish with the Red Sox. A nice series loss for the Boston Red Sox.
Good
who
loss.
Looked undefeated, just completely unstoppable at Fenway, unstoppable everywhere. And the A's, who have a very strong case as the worst team in baseball, more on that in a second, take 2 out of 3. And this is after getting run off the field on Friday, 13-1. Peyton Tolley strikes out 14. He's freaking awesome. But then the A's, little scrappy A's, get back at him on Saturday. Gage Jump was terrific. Second time he's beat the Red Sox in the last month. How weird is that? A's win 7-3 Saturday, 4-3 on Sunday. Garrett Whitlock and Aroldis Chapman, who have been essentially flawless this season, they both had bad outings on Sunday, and so the A's win a close one. Just a really funny hiccup for Boston. The ultimate trap series, right? I mean, I guess that's what this is, because they were on the streak, and coming into the weekend, you're just penciling in another 3 wins, so let's just keep the party going. And then, you know, baseball happens and the A's win something. So the A's hadn't won back-to-back games since the end of June, hadn't won a series since early June. They are terrible. They are a total mess. And that is why they fired David Forst, it seems, among other reasons. That will be our final topic here in our first segment. Because look, the Red Sox, am I not worried about the Red Sox? No, I think they've clearly proven enough to that we think they're going to be in the postseason, and They had Adley still hasn't played yet, although it sounds like he's going to make his Red Sox debut here soon. I know he went on a rehab outing. So, listen, Boston, we'll move that to the side. The A's were in the news, though, because before the series even began, we got this report from Ken Rosenthal and Charlotte Varnes. Shout out Charlotte, one of our favorites.
Charvar.
She reports alongside Ken that they, and I imagine this is related to Charlotte used to cover the A's for a little bit. So plugged in there. And here we go. David Forst, after more than a quarter century working for this ball club, including as really the head decision maker for the last decade or so, has been let go. Yes, they announce it as mutually agreed to part ways. That's very kind of them. That's not what this is. What this is moving on from someone who's been there a long time and a organization that is in transition, that is planning to play in Las Vegas in 2028. And I think one of the big questions was, what would this leadership group look like as this transition happened? Force stayed in charge. Last year, they showed flashes of positive momentum and look at this incredible offensive core. And this year, that offensive core has either regressed or gotten injured. And the pitching, which has been atrocious now for several years running, has remained atrocious, which has made them altogether, by run differential, the worst team in baseball, and by performance over the last couple of months, pretty clearly the worst team in baseball. And so while this is disappointing, and I've always liked talking to David Forst, you know, at the spring training media days, he seems like a smart guy that a lot of people respect, and considering the circumstances, has done a pretty good job. This is the guy that was in charge when this team was going to the postseason pretty frequently with absolutely no payroll whatsoever. He deserves credit for that. It is not surprising that they are going to look for some new, fresh leadership going into Las Vegas. And I think that while I'm disappointed that Force couldn't really see it out, and it sounds like he maybe wouldn't have been as interested in relocating anyway, this is not that surprising to me. I mean, he was there so long that you just assumed he could stay as long as he wanted. But listen, this has been a pretty disastrous season for the A's, even if you do look at the injuries. And I think that it's not an accident that that maybe is why they felt like they wanted or had to make this move in season as opposed to after the season.
Jordan, you and I should do that job. Would you? Here's a real question. This is a dumb question, but it's a real one. Would you move to Vegas if you could co-run the A's with me? Like, John Fisher, the A's owner, calls us and he says, "Hey guys, love the show. Love all your takes. We want you to run the A's. You can make whatever hires you want. You have a mid-sized budget. Okay. Once we move to Vegas, it's going to be a decent payroll. Jake and Jordan, you have to move to Vegas to run the A's. Would you do it?"
No. What I thought you were going to suggest is, this is a good question, is can we just do the last year in Sacramento to have some fun? You know, just like the one little, you know, let that be. I don't want to deal with Vegas. But if I'm not telling, you know, my wife, we're going to Vegas, that's where we're going to be, because I don't want to do that anyway. But if it was just like 1 year in California and we get to hang out at the Sut and, you know, do some funky pitching, have Hogan Harris opening and then closing and then starting, like, so we can have all kinds of fun with this roster.
Maybe we could ask John Fisher if we can work remote.
Oh.
Only one of us would need to be there.
John Fisher, he was in charge of the A's for a long time without showing up. Why can't we? He was never around.
Would you? Okay, let me rephrase the question. I moved to Vegas. My wife and I, we moved to Vegas.
Oh, and I get to sit on this desk and run the A's with you?
And you get to stay in Ohio and run the A's. You're in? I need you out there once a month for a couple days.
I'm in. That's fine. I can do that.
Great. John Fisher.
All right.
Email us, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. Would you like for us to run your team? It couldn't go much worse than this season. Let's take a break. When we get back, we'll do the National League. Welcome back to Baseball Barbecast. Are the Dodgers chopped? Let's go around the National League. Is Tarek Skubal just like stealing everyone's talent since arriving in LA? Because these Dodgers stink. They lose 2 out of 3 over the weekend to the Diamondbacks in Arizona. That first loss ran a losing streak to an L7. They win on Saturday. They lose again on Sunday. 2 blown saves on Friday, Saturday from Edwin Diaz, who's off the IL, but pitching like he's still on it. Jordan, what's going wrong? What's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, the story here is probably more so that the Diamondbacks look pretty good, but I know you don't like talking
really
about them,
good.
So we will... They really do look very good, and I think you can really start taking them seriously as a postseason team. Now, are they going to catch the Dodgers in the NL West standings? I will say they no longer have the largest division lead. That now belongs to the Braves, who are 8.5 over the Phillies. Dodgers only 7.5 over the Snakes. But 7.5 is still a large number, and so the Diamondbacks can stay focused on reaching the wild card, but that could be the second wild card with how the Phillies are playing, maybe not just the third wild card. So credit to the Snakes. I just, so impressed with Eduardo Rodriguez. Brandon Pfaadt has been incredible. Weird yep. season for him, was really trending almost out of the rotation entirely. They moved him to the bullpen. That wasn't really doing anything. He's been so good since he rejoined the rotation. So he's been great. To have a walk-off homer from Ryan Waldschmidt is cool. That's like a new character, a rookie, kind of adding some offense to them. Ketel Marte with his 20th homer season. Yep. So listen,
and
one other Snicks. Yeah, a new Schmidt. That's true. We would love to. That's a great point. Do you think we've had guys to people change their Goldschmidt jerseys?
To Waldschmidt
to like edit them. I don't know how close the numbers are, but I know people like to do that. By the way, I would say as much as I love that from a creativity standpoint, I think it is also reflective of just how expensive jerseys have gotten now that people are just like, what? I'd rather make this janky duct tape version of the new player as opposed to buying an actual new jersey,
yes.
which is probably not very good quality.
I would like to talk about the Dodgers.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm not just, everything's Dodgers, everything's Dodgers. This weekend was very interesting. I watched a lot of these games because it provided a template, a roadmap, an example of what it will look like when this all ends. Do I think that this Dodgers team is in trouble in 2026? No, I don't. Their pitching is still too good. However, when the time comes for this unit, it will be because the offense got old. And this offense over the weekend looked old. And it is old. If you just go by age, this is either the oldest or the second oldest offense in the sport, them and the Phillies. Freddie looks like he's lost a half step over the last couple of weeks at the plate. Mookie's still mired in this season-long decline that might be sticky. Teoscar Hernandez got pinch hit for late in a weird spot. Muncy's just been unlucky. He's an incredible thing. But Kike is not really helpful anymore at this point. The only hitters that have been decent for them in August
and they don't
are
have catchers.
Kyle Tucker and Ohtani and Andy Pies, and they don't have catchers.
Yeah.
That's not really old, but in the Will Smith conversation, it is. Is this team in trouble? No. But what we saw this weekend in Arizona is an example of what happens when it will go wrong. Because this, will the Dodgers be good forever? Maybe. But this group of players won't be good forever. And we saw our future here, I think.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I also think that, and you mentioned him there briefly, Kyle Tucker, 1,000 OPS over his last 15 games.
He's been their
now
best
player.
Now you
would say, well, thank goodness, finally, you're making a bajillion dollars and you've been terrible for 4 months. That's also why they signed Kyle Tucker. Because, because they could,
not
and
old.
They're the Dodgers, and this is what they do. He's a normal age baseball player. He is still in his 20s. Ooh. He's still in his 20s.
Jealous.
We're not still in our 20s. Kyle Tucker.
Jealous.
I mean, look at this youthful guy. So, I mean, it sounds flippant, and it's still an absurd bit of luxury to have this guy who at one point was like batting seventh and not looked like anything. but that is a really talented player that it would not surprise me if he has an 1,000 OPS for the rest of the season and is their most important hitter going into October. That would not surprise me at all. And we'll be like, oh yeah, that's why they felt like they needed to do this, because they had this hole in the outfield, and not just the hole in the outfield, this looming reality of most of our lineup is really old and sometimes injured. Now you're kind of dealing with that. So I agree with you. And it could rear its head in the postseason, because that's what it looked like when they were a few years younger. It's kind of how they went cold and got eliminated in 23, right? So we know what this looks like. And I do think that, and this is a good transition to the Phillies. I mean, let's just say it straight up, right? Like, we've already started talking about this at All-Star, but it's too early to really start looking at the bracket. But if the Dodgers want to avoid the wildcard series this year, they really got to kick it into gear, because the Braves and Brewers are playing very well. They're several games ahead of them. And if they miss the bye again, they might just not be as fortunate to get a team. Okay, but they might not be as fortunate to get as easy of a wildcard opponent as the Cincinnati Reds, you know?
The scrimmage.
And right now it's very, very plausible that they could end up in a 3-game series with the Phillies, which would be incredible content, and certainly what we're rooting for is neutrals. And also the last group of pitchers that you would want to run into if you are a lineup that is maybe capable of going cold for a few days.
100%. The Dodgers... The most interesting storyline in the NL, besides who gets the last wildcard spots, is do the Dodgers get a bye? Because both Arizona and Philly are tough matchups for them. The Diamondbacks, I know this is such a lazy thing to say, just feels like they've always had their number. They're the last team to beat them in the playoffs, man. Like, that is not nothing. Ketel Marte and Corbin Carroll aren't going to stroll into Dodger Stadium and be afraid. Do the Diamondbacks have the pitching to contend with the Dodgers in a 3-game set?
They got Brandon Garcia, man.
They got Brady. Oh, my God.
They got some real relievers suddenly. Like, I don't know what the deal with Puck and Justin Martinez is. I know we were talking about them. I have no idea what's going on with Corbin Burns.
Yeah.
Soroka is supposed to come back soon. They actually have more than we maybe would have expected at this point. So I agree, whether it's them or Philadelphia, that might not be so fun.
It won't be. I would say Phillies-Dodgers is a series I would try and get out to L.A. for. Three games.
Sure.
That's going to be so good. Let's move over to the Phillies, who are like the most infuriating operation right now. They lost 2 out of 3 over the weekend to the Blue Jays, who are still playing interesting baseball. Very eventful series. I think, am I right, all 3 of these games went to extras?
Is that true? I think 2 of them did.
I think all three of them did.
No, the first one did not.
My apologies.
Friday.
But it felt like it did, because the Phillies came back and put up a couple runs in the bottom of the 9th. This bullpen is exhausted. It is also not that good.
Yeah.
That the Phillies did not reinforce this unit more sufficiently at the deadline is mind-boggling to me. Caleb Killian might already be hurt. He was their main addition at the deadline. They just need a nap. Everyone is like, oh, they've pitched 3 times in 5, 6 and 8, 2 and 3. Like, it's a bad unit that's been overused. I think a lot of that falls on Don Mattingly, who, for all of the moxie and experience, might not be good at managing.
Which is funny, because for a while, it was like, whatever, they changed it up. It's not nothing against Rob Thompson. We're playing better. Of course we are. Now, not only is like maybe their playoff spot in jeopardy, but if they do get to October, now we are going to be starting to talk about Don Mattingly as a postseason manager, which is kind of a different thing.
That it is. Kyle Schwarber hit 2 home runs on Sunday. That was a big deal. He had been on really one of the coldest stretches since he got to Philadelphia, with 1 home run since the All-Star break heading into Sunday. Went yard twice. On Sunday, Aaron Nola hit 2,000 strikeouts on Saturday. Max Scherzer moved into 10th all-time in strikeouts in MLB history. That was pretty cool. Couple late comebacks for the Jays on Saturday. I watched most of the Sunday game. It was just so drunk and unenjoyable. The thing that I think is worth harping on for the Phillies is their deadline was good and insufficient at the same time. Arise has been a difference maker. Like, he is already doing the things he was brought there to do. They needed a more contact-oriented player to hit behind Harper. Harper is already being more patient, like, noticeably. He is chasing way less. He walked four times on Sunday. Granted, did not score a single run. But having Arise hitting behind him instead of Alec Bohm or whatever is going to mean more walks for Harper and then, consequentially, more pitches in the zone that he can handle and do damage on. Unbelievable stat from friend of the program, Matt Gelb. Bryson Stott, who's better than you think, he gets lumped in with Bohm far too often. Bryson Stott is the first player with at least 14 walks and no strikeouts over an 11-game span since Barry Bonds in September 2002.
Did he tweet that? Because I got to put that in the thread. That is absolute fire. That is,
it's incredible.
That's really good. That is really good stuff. So yeah, I love that. And listen, the Phillies, I don't know. It's like Derek Hill's been, where would they be without Derek Hill is a real thing that I can say with a straight face.
This team, I can't decide if they suck and won't miss the playoffs or will miss the playoffs, excuse me, or if they're the 2019 Nats. They're one of those two things. It's either the
like
last
this is the
gasp,
year they finally
like the team that sucks the most is and starts the year cold with the manager that doesn't really know what he's doing and a bunch of stars is the team that eventually wins it with like six viable pitchers.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty similar or they just suck.
Yeah. Quickly on Toronto, just since we didn't mention them earlier. The main thing to say about them is that they're still seven games under at 56-63. But because that's the same record as the team they played in the ALCS last year, now it's not just like, oh man, the Mariners suck, but at least they're not the Blue Jays. Well, now they're at the same place in the standings. So they have the opportunity to move that label over to Seattle as far as the most disappointing team in the American League. All right, couple more series before we take another break. This was another interesting interleague matchups. Padres taking 2 out of 3 over the Astros, who maintain their lead in the AL West slightly, just by a half game over Texas. The Padres with a nice win on Sunday Night Baseball, including just a really... That Tatis homer, man, it's just like, where has this been? I know he's had some home runs, but when you see him do that, you're just like, how is he not doing this all the time? How is this not at least once a series that he's hitting a ball 420 into the second deck? Because it's not like he hasn't been hitting the ball hard. It's just Tatis really is singular in that regard. And Jackson Merrill has really found it over the last month. And we've already talked about how Machado has started to hit well, too. So this is still a team with essentially zero depth. And even like Casey Mize was not good in his Padres debut. And Robbie Ray wasn't really awesome either. So I still am looking at this rotation like I'm glad that they did something at the deadline. I still don't really know how good it is. The bottom of this lineup, I still feel the same way. But hey, man, they're a game out. And I do hope that they can play well enough to where Petco is buzzing for the remainder of the season. And I want to keep talking about this team. As disappointing as they've been, they've got enough interesting players and like the Mason Miller of it all. It's going to be hard to totally give up on them unless they really fall out of it.
The offense has been better over the last month and a half. They have the fourth highest WRC plus since the start of July. A lot of that's Jackson Merrill. A lot of that's Ty France. The big development over the weekend is Michael King with another strong outing, 6 innings, 1 run. They need him to be a real boy. And now that they went out and got Mize and Robbie Ray, I know neither of them were particularly great in their first starts. They have a real rotation. Like they have 4.5 actual starting pitchers, which is something they didn't have for basically a full month. And you add, you know, 2 of the 5 best relievers in the world, maybe, with Mason Miller and Adrian Morejon. Dude, go pull up Adrian Morejon's Savant page.
Oh my God.
I mean, holy Lord.
And by the way, like, again, like Bradley Rodriguez and Estrada is starting to look a lot more like himself. He did not look, I mean, he had been an impact guy for the last few years and was not for the start of the season. So they have the pieces there. I don't know. I still hope our guy Randy Vasquez can get a postseason start. Although,
don't count.
I guess the deadline moves probably indicate otherwise.
How long did he go yesterday? I know he started
five.
Sunday.
I think he went five.
Five.
Innings.
Let's see how Dandy Randy went.
That's our guy, man. Five, he went six strong, scoreless. The outing
before. Hits,
four.
Two earned.
He's cooking.
1K, no walks. Oh.
We love Randy Vasquez. We
to lower the
love
ERA
Randy
to 4,
Vasquez.
1,
all right,
6. He's good.
One more. He starts. They survive wild card series. He starts game one of the DS
in LA.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
Mercy rule.
One more series before we take a break. The Mets stay hot.
They're alive.
I told you folks on Friday, after being around them last week, I was like, this team's going to win some ball games. This team is going to make it, just as they put Cleveland in a bad mood, they're going to put some teams that are trying to win in a bad mood. And sure enough, they stroll into Pittsburgh and take 2 of 3. They just destroy them on Friday. And then they had Robert Stock. What a story. God bless him. One of the more online baseball players for sure. Robert Stock, a longtime follower of Sesame's Family Barbecue. So he had a terrible outing on Saturday. Bubba Chandler was terrific. Good to see that there. But then on Sunday, Jared Jones, 8 earned runs. And Sean Manaea, where did this come from? 11 strikeouts for the first time in 2 years. He didn't have more
He's
than
back.
8 since 2024. So good for him. We got Luis Robert Jr., Francisco Alvarez home runs, and the Mets win 11-1. Mets are having a good time. We've talked about them. I'm happy for them. They're going to have a good time the rest of the year, but unfortunately, their playoff odds are still like 1%. So let's focus on the Pirates, whose playoff odds are now dangerously close to the New York Mets. They have fallen below 10%. This is a team that, again, longest playoff draw in the National League, and their playoff odds were as high as 62% in June. And now they are how many games back? Five games back in the
five and a half games
back in the wild card. They're 4 games under 500. And look, frankly, like, it's a different genre because, you know, what really were the expectations for the Pirates this year is an interesting debate. The pressure was on the front office and the team to finally be good and competent. Is it fair to say we expected them to be in the postseason? Probably not. That said, with how the season was going, with how well the offense was performing, you would have assumed that that would have been good enough to at least very much stay in the mix all the way to the end. And now, I mean, we might not even be talking about them in September, which is just horribly disappointing for a team that I think seemed to like really convince us that we thought that this could be a real threat to be a playoff team. And now I don't know. And I think that what's happening on the mound there is,
oh,
I don't know, man. I don't know, man. Like, it's not just the bullpen. It's not just the bullpen, folks. This rotation has gone backwards.
Four rotation ERA. It is the 21st
best mark in the sport.
They're 21st. 4.44 ERA for a rotation that entered the year as one of the game's best, or thought of as one of the game's best.
Projected.
An utter
right. Ascendant.
That is a higher mark than the bullpen. We had all this conversation about, oh, the Pirates going to fix the bullpen. The rotation has been worse by ERA than the bullpen.
Oh, my God. That's a wild stat. And so I don't know. I know they've had some coaching changes there. I know Bill Murphy was getting a lot of credit early on, and then now it's like, what's going on here? I don't know, man. But this is another example. I mentioned it back at the top. The Pirates clearly have been able to do some things well, whether it's some of their drafting, some of the offseason signings, right? Bring in some of the trades, some of the signings. And yet, there's something off. It's not everything is going right, and that will cost you when it's really hard to win in this league. And so the Pirates still had so much to prove coming into the season. And unfortunately, we're now kind of back at the same place where, yeah, you have a lot of talented pieces in place in the way that they have it in recent seasons, but we're still kind of back at the same spot of, well, they might still end up at 78 wins again. And that is horribly disappointing. And I don't know, man. This sucks. This one bums me out more than the Mariners. And I'm not, seriously. Like, it's just like, come on. Like,
I agree.
For these fans, for how long they've, for how little with it, this is, it felt like
because
we were finally going towards something.
The hard part, like, this team is scoring runs. Their offense is good. And the rotation is just like taking such a massive, massive step backwards. Speaking of massive step backwards, let's take a break. When we get back, we'll fly through the rest of the series from the weekend. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. A couple more Serie to get to. Let's go fast. Turbo mode. Nationals take 2 out of 3. No. Lies. Nationals sweep. They sweep. Are they allowed to do this? The Nationals sweep the Reds at home over the weekend after their deadline. Mini sell-off. Only the second sweep of the year for the Nats. Their first since mid-April. The rejuvenated, reworked bullpen does its job with a absolute gem, a bullpen game gem on Sunday. The Nats win that 7-1. Brad Lord, Will Dion, Trevor Williams, Jake Bird get the job done.
I mean, that's, it's just music to Nats fans' ears, right? That's the recipe right there. Lord to Dion to Trevor to Jake Bird. Good for the Nats. And honestly, all we have to say about the Reds is like, okay, you swept the A's and you got past the Pirates in the standings. And we're like, oh, wait, Reds, hold on. Wait. No. The Nats are better than the Reds. And that is not exactly breaking news. Let's go to Milwaukee. This was kind of a juicy one. Brewers take 2 out of 3 over the Twins. Kalen Culpepper is here, folks. One of my favorite draft prospects, one of my favorite minor league prospects, and now one of my favorite big leaguers, homers in his major league debut. And Twins win on Friday. Very, very cool. And the Twins are if anything, I'm like, now I'm more excited to watch the Twins because Kalen Culpepper is going to play. So that fires me up. But the Brewers do bounce back and win a couple close ones on Saturday and Sunday. Just a good example of like, they're just figuring it out, right? It ain't pretty, but especially at home. They win the games. Usually at the end, the Brewers win the games, certainly in the regular season. So Jake Bauer is another big game. What a season for him. He has the walk-off single in the 10th. And Jacob Mizorowski, I'll just shout out the great Sam Miller, who, of course, one of the best in the business. You can really only find him over on Blue Sky right now. But he posted on Blue Sky over the weekend basically saying, Mizorowski since May 1 or maybe June 1 is the best pitching he's ever seen in his life. And he was like, I don't even think it's a hot take. He was like, yeah, it probably sounds like duh, but he's like, I'm putting it on the record. I think maybe 30 seconds after he posted that, Brooks Lee took him deep. So that was funny. But I don't disagree with him. He's had 200 strikeouts in 130 innings, and he is absolutely unbelievable. So what that looks like in the postseason, if he can maintain this, I think if he stays healthy, I really do. I actually don't think it's going to be close between him and Sanchez, but we'll see. Because the dominance is just nothing we've ever seen before. But just figured he deserved a note there.
My favorite Miz thing is just who homers off of him. Like when you have a pitcher who's this dominant, he's going to give up home runs like all the time because... If you're really good, you're probably throwing the ball in the zone a lot. And if you're zoning it up, you're going to give up more homers. A
lot of fastballs, too.
But a lot of fastballs. That allows people to go yard off Miz, where you're like, that guy took Miz deep. The last 4 homers off Miz, Jordan, Cole Kerrig of the Rockies, who's pretty good and deserves more love, Wade Meckler of the Angels, Brooks Lee, Cody Clemens. They took Miz deep.
Yeah, and it's weird. He has been kind of homer prone the last like month. He also went 11 straight outings without allowing a home run from mid-April to mid-June. So, like I said, I mean, this is pitching unlike anything we've ever seen. All right. Three more series. The Marlins over the Angels. Hopefully everyone was locked in on this one. Surprise, surprise. Mike Trout homers on his birthday on Friday. And I'm glad that the Angels also won that game so that Mike Trout could enjoy his birthday. However, the Marlins bounce back because they are the better baseball team. Sandy Alcantara sets the franchise record for most innings by a fish pitcher. 7 scoreless for Sandy. Love to see that. They win 7-0. And then they clobber them on Sunday because Grayson Rodriguez is not having a great time as an Angel. And Sean Anderson is on their team for some reason, and he was even worse. So Marlins win on Saturday and Sunday, and they are still, 500? They're still hanging around. Sure. Why not?
One thing about the series, shouts out to friend of the program, Daniel Alvarez Montes,
yes,
who on Sunday participated in like the first of his of its kind type broadcast, doing Spanish language TV on Telemundo for the Marlins Angels game.
Yes,
pretty cool. Like happy
for
him.
I believe they're doing a bunch of those for the rest of the season, which is incredible and well deserved opportunity. Obviously, Daniel's been on this podcast. He's one of our favorite people and one of just the best at this whole job. So. Congrats to Daniel on the Sort broadcast and looking forward to seeing what else he can do.
All right. Cubs over the Royals, 2 out of 3. Kevin Gausman, first Cubs outing was good. Pedro Ramirez homered in that one. The Cubs won 6-4. Cags took over on Saturday. 2 bombs from him, went 4-for-4. Outrageous Bobby Witt Jr. Jeter throw, which then led to a tired debate online about Jeter versus Bobby Witt Jr. Just like Jeter was better than you think and worse than your Yankees fan friend thinks. And those things are both true.
Oh, man.
Clay Holmes not good in his first outing for the Cubs, so the Royals win on Saturday. Sunday, Matt Boyd, 7 innings, 2 runs. Cubs have 18 hits and win 10-2. The Royals, for some reason, have signed future Hall of Famer Craig Kimbrell. Jordan, does he go into the Hall of Fame with the Mets hat, the Rays hat, or the Royals hat, the 3 teams he's played for this year?
So I guess the first some reason is they've been one of the 3 worst bullpens in the league, and I guess they need some help for a season that is going nowhere. So I don't really know what to make of that. I just can't. I mean, Craig Kimbrell is just going to keep trying to find the bad bullpens and keep racking them up. I hope he pitches there for 2 weeks and then gets released and goes to the Nationals and then goes to the Rockies. Like, let's make a real run at this record here. This is his 12th major league team. Edwin Jackson, Rich Hill at 14. I mean, Craig Kimbrell seems to be committed to this bit. I don't really want to rule it out that he's just going to try this again next
year. My man
does not want
to go home.
Yeah. So I both respect it and don't totally understand it, but God bless Craig Kimbrell. I hope you enjoy being in the Royals bullpen. Finally, we will stay in Missouri, where the St. Louis Cardinals took 2 out of 3 over the Colorado Rockies. Cardinals, let's just put them in with the Marlins. Who do you think? Let's just go with those 2 teams. Let's just finish on this. Who will finish with a better record? Who will finish with a closer?
Same record.
Will finish with the same record. And how many games back? Here, let's write this down. They will finish with the same record, but whichever one it is, how many games back?
They'll both finish at 500.
And how many games back will that be from the third wild card? I will write this down and we will check it.
I'll say 4.
Okay. So Marlins, the Jupiter spring trainings, will both finish at 81-81, and you'll say that that's 4 games back, so 85. Okay, all right. I could see it. I like that.
Thanks.
All right, we're done. Thank you, sure, to Carter Singh and Ross Tudor for producing. We'll be back on Wednesday. Andrew Hartz will be back on Wednesday. I'll be back on Wednesday, and then I'm going on vacation for a week, so I'll be off for 3 shows. Jake will have some fun without me, but I will be here on Wednesday. I look forward to that show. By the way, hold on. Let me finish this up to really go full circle here. Did you Google this like I did? I Googled, when are the dog days of summer? Ooh. And according to Google AI Overview, which is never wrong, but also a couple of the other sources.
Never
here,
wrong.
Hilariously, it says that it runs from July 3rd
to August 11th, which is tomorrow, which means that it's already over. It's already, this is the last dog day.
So what I'm learning is that the term dog days of summer is tied to the star system Sirius, which is like dog oriented. I got to call my sister, who's an astrophysicist. She'll know. And
I actually know this one. The constellation.
Oh, I did. Yeah. And that is like kind of the reason behind it. I think that the baseball dog days do not overlap with the dog days.
I think so,
those are two different things. Because if the trade deadline was earlier, then the dog days could be earlier. But the dog days of summer in baseball kind of refers to sort of like the a lull, a certain monotony that takes place before the stretch run.
So I agree. Some homework for you. I'm not going to be at the ballpark this week. I would like you to ask ball players that you see this week. If you're, I know you're not going today. If you're going tomorrow, maybe we can do this on Wednesday.
Yeah.
How would they define it? I would love for ball players to define it, because I do think that it is probably a little bit later than what this tells us. All right, we're done. Baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you all so much, and we will talk to you on Wednesday.